Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Charges is created by Portal A and Control Media. It's produced by DB Podcasts in association with iHeartRadio.
This time, a former Suns player who you might remember as T-Rex.
More video in just a moment, but this is Rex Chapman's mugshot, and we are learning a lot more about the charges.
But I don't remember another positive thing, and it's because of how I dealt with it. One moment ended it for me. No, I don't party, right? I don't waste my high on anybody else. It's mine and mine alone. And if I can't be high, I want to be dead. That's where I was. My addict brain heard, not only are you a terrible football player, but you are a awful human being.
Welcome to Charges. I'm your host, Rex Chapman. Today on the podcast, we have a guest who in a lot of ways should be an inspiration to people, but we'll get into why later. Today, we welcome a former Charger to Charges. For those people who don't know, Ryan Leaf was a football prodigy, an absolute stud in high school. From a small town in Montana, he's literally the only person from Montana to be drafted in the first round of the modern day NFL. He went to Washington State and finished third in the Heisman race behind future Hall of Famers Charles Woodson and Peyton Manning. Ryan became the number two pick in the 1998 NFL draft behind Peyton Manning to the then San Diego Chargers. He started his career 2-0, the first rookie to do that in 16 years, the first rookie since John Elway. So in almost every way, a pure stud, absolute talent. But as we all know, it isn't just physical ability that matters in life or sports. There are so many other factors to consider: mental health, surroundings, expectations. And today, we're going to talk with Ryan about his incredible rise and then what happens when things don't go as expected or as anticipated. Also, Ryan and I share a history with painkillers and opioids we'll talk about. If you or a loved one is struggling, I want you to know there's help out there and we're here for you. You are not alone.
Charges.
Man, Ryan Leaf, I'm honored, really, to have you join here today. I know that some of this stuff, it's not comfortable or pleasant to talk about, but man, I'm excited to talk to you today.
Well, I think once you find acceptance in it, it's emotionally draining, don't get me wrong, but, you know, it's so freeing to tell your truth. It just is now. You're not telling lies. You're not covering things up. You're just, this is who I am. I'm okay with it. You don't like it. You know, too bad.
Well put. You know, I obviously, I knew you from football watching. You were kind of coming in as I was exiting my pro career. So I followed you as a college player and then on into the pros. And then, of course, you know, with things that went on afterwards. But as I was reading up on you the last few weeks, so much of it really resonated with me. And you're from Great Falls, Montana. How big is Great Falls?
It's small, you know, it's small for anywhere else. It's fairly large for Montana. I think around 65,000 people.
It's about the same. I grew up in Owensboro, Kentucky, in a town of about 60,000 people. And it was a great sports town. But from a very young age, I was like the best, you know, in the grade and in the school and all of that. And I lived my whole life by the stat sheet and whether we won or lost. And that was my whole identity. So when I was studying up on some of your stuff, we're both from, you know, small states. You know, what has football meant to you? What does it still mean to you? And could you paint a picture for Great Falls for the listeners who, you know, have no idea what it might look like?
It's a really introverted, conservative, blue-collar, undiverse town. And to your point, you know, I was far and away the best athlete they had seen, I don't know, maybe ever. I'm the only Montanan that's ever been drafted in the first round of the NFL draft, ever. There are more first-round draft picks in the Manning family than the whole state of Montana ever. So,
wow.
I didn't have a trailblazer. I just wanted to get out. And I thought being a success was to get out of that small town and be a professional athlete, whatever that looked like. Basketball was it for me for so long. I mean, I loved it.
I saw your jump shot.
And I could jump, you know, for a white boy. Jalen Rose was my hero. I wore, you know, the gold shorts down to my ankles. I shaved my head. I had the black socks, you know. That didn't fit very well in Montana. My mom was so worried about what other people thought. She kind of really shamed me from a young age.
What do you think made you do that? And I'm asking because it sounds really familiar. But what made you sort of, because you're going to stand out if you do that. What do you think that was about?
I didn't necessarily think I would. I just didn't see it that way. I loved Magic Johnson and Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, you know. And so that's who I envisioned who I was. And when I saw Kobe Bryant dunk for the first time and turn himself into like a 747 going down the court, I remember when I tried that for the first time, the damn coach pulled me off the side and benched me. You know, I just was, I guess, ahead of my time. You know, they just wanted their star athletes to be good at the sport and just shut up and dribble, essentially. And I've never been that guy, I guess. I just, you know, I was confident in myself, and I was a drug addict long before I ever took a drug. The fear, the judgment, all the things that exist, my first drug of choice was just competition. Had to win at anything and everything, and I would embarrass you in the process. That's how I won. If you treated me poorly, you know, I was kind of from the poor side of the river. I didn't really want for anything. My parents did a tremendous job, but I mean, there was another side of the river where the country club was and where those kids were, and I wasn't part of that group.
I feel so much of that, man. I think back, and there are so many parallels. How did the people in Great Falls treat you? I'm sure you were a star all through, what, middle school, high school?
My fans and my coaches, you know, they liked it because we would win. The state didn't, really. They didn't understand it. I remember my basketball coach was out, standing out in front during the JV game, watching it play in a gentleman, we were on the road, and a gentleman came walking up and asked Coach McLean, who was our head coach, whether that Leaf boy was playing tonight. And Coach McLean said, yeah, he's going to be playing. You know, that's what he does. He's like, oh, that's great. I just came here to boo his ass, you know? And Coach McLean couldn't understand it. Like I rebounded hard. I played defense. I scored. I could dunk. There wasn't many guys who could dunk in the state of Montana. I could shoot from distance. And I loved to win. You know, maybe I didn't act appropriately when we lost, you know, because I was so distraught. And I looked at other guys like, why didn't you give it everything you had like I did? Because it just wasn't as important to them, you know, and I understand that now. But At the time, I was like, what's wrong with you?
Were you mature early? You look like a different species out there, that you're flying around the court and you're playing against a bunch of small white guys. And I know what that felt like, but you looked, you know, did you feel that way?
I could jump. I was athletic and I could jump and I loved to compete. But I was 6'4", 165 pounds. So, I wasn't a beast or anything, you know. It was a tall, lanky, you know, string bean that was rolling around the state of Montana. And then we won a state championship in football my junior year, and I was named the starter. And all of a sudden, I started getting recruited by, like, every college in the country for football. And I'm like, I mean, I guess. I like quarterback, but
why not?
You know, why not? So I put on a few extra pounds and away we ran.
That's amazing. You know, I think back to growing up, I had my circle of friends and there's a fine line. Obviously you've heard the people, they've referred to you as an asshole. What gets me is that every talent scout ever, they're looking for a guy or an athlete that's got a little asshole in them, that's got a little prick in them, right? That's supposed to be a good thing. Because I think back, and for sure, I didn't really have it off of the court, but everything that I was competing on, ping pong, it didn't matter. You know, I was trying to win, and at all costs. I was able to shut that off in pretty much every other area, though.
Me too. I was this quiet introvert off the court. And guess what? All the people that talked to the media and heard that I was an asshole, those weren't my real friends. None of my real friends would have ever said that. The guys that I actually shared with and spent my time with and who knew who I was and knew the fragile state of my, you know, my consciousness, you know, they would have never said that. What's so shameful about it is that I'm a kid, right? And like the state railed against me and shamed me. You know, when I was up for the Heisman Trophy, they did a poll and I finished fourth in my hometown. It is what it is. But I had every opportunity to, like, because I was just a kid. They were all adults, you know, And so I had every opportunity when things went well for me to come home and take the high road and make them a part of it, like make them a part of the journey and be like, you know what? Neither one of us knew what the hell we were doing. We were the first. I'm not going to hold that against you. Let's do this together. Let's go on a journey together as a town, as a state. But instead, I came home and was like, I fucking told you. I told you. You all can go fuck off. All right, I am a god, and you are about to watch it play out. And that's what a mindset to have. And that's just the ego. That's the ego monster that just took over, and like the resentment. That's the resentment. I resented them so much that I was willing to, you know, rail against them rather than to, you know, taking the high road and showing love. That's the hardest thing to do.
Yeah, man, and especially when we're kind of wired to compete and, you know, showing that humility and being vulnerable, it took me a long time, man. It just did. How did you end up at Washington State?
Mike Price, the head coach. You know, I was recruited by pretty much everybody. He called the day of the Rose Bowl, 1994, January 1st, 1994. Asked what I was doing. I told him I was watching the Rose Bowl. It was UCLA and Wisconsin playing. And he just said, hey, I'll make you a deal, Ryan. You come to Washington State, you and I will play in that game together. And I bought it, hook, line, and sinker. You know, I hadn't done any research. I hadn't realized I hadn't been there since 1931.
Right. You know, if were you like me, I promise, when I got to college, I didn't know nor care about anybody else. Like, Pat Riley played here. Didn't know that. Just thought he was the coach of the Lakers. And I can remember thinking, I never said it, but I can remember thinking, oh, you guys haven't seen anything like me, apparently. And so I'm telling you, I had this mindset. People had never seen a guy run and jump like me. And I wondered, did you feel much the same in football? Because, you know, your Heisman season, dude, you had, for the most part, better numbers than Peyton. You end up finishing behind Charles Woodson. No shame in that. What was that season like for you on the field?
Dream come true.
This year, a tremendous crop of quarterback talent in the Pac-10, maybe the deepest ever. The guy at the top of that class was certainly Ryan Leaf.
An athlete first, football player second, and quarterback third. Tough,
aggressive, emotional, symbolic of his feisty Cougar compadres.
Every Cougar that's ever gone to school at Washington State, it's their goal to go to the Rose Bowl, and he's taken us to the Rose Bowl. We used to compare him to Drew Bledsoe. Now everybody's going to be compared to Ryan Leaf.
Dream come true. It was easy. Just step on the field, and we kind of had our way with everybody. We were prepared. We knew what we were doing. We had come together as a team. We were kind of, you know, a bunch of players that were from the island of misfit toys, guys from JC's and who had problems in high school that probably could have gone to USC and things like that from Southern California. And we ended up getting them. And I mean, just, we just played so well together. There was 26 seniors on the team, opened the year against UCLA and USC, beat them both. And we were just off and running. It was special. Best year of my life when it came to competing with the guys I competed with. So much fun. So much fun.
What stands, any specific plays stand out for you or teammates in the moment that you think about when you think back about, you know, being on that national stage?
Yeah, my offensive linemen. Two of them were walk-ons. My five wide receivers, they called themselves the Fab Five. You know, my old linemen felt jealous, so they nicknamed themselves the Fat Five.
nice.
You know, and then nice. We had a tight end, a running back, and myself. You know, we were balanced. We averaged 550 yards of offense, 330, 220 rushing. We were ahead of our time in what we were doing as an offense. I led the nation in passing. I just found that out like a year ago doing one of my radio shows. Someone brought that to my attention. I'm like, you serious?
Yeah, don't poo-poo that, man. That's big shit.
Peyton Manning was in that draft class, and I still led the nation in passing. That's cool.
Amazing. Amazing.
No, it was a great year. Everything played out like we wanted it to. We didn't quite win the game, but there was a controversial ending, a rule change because of it, and spiking the ball with the amount of time left on the clock. And so Coach Bryce always tells everybody that we didn't lose that game. We just ran out of time, and I couldn't agree with him more.
I want to ask you how you've handled the fame portion of your college career. I know it was a bit of a mixed bag for me, and sometimes I liken it to, you know, being a child actor, because, you know, if you're on a show from the time you're 8 to 12, the world knows you like that, and you're kind of, that's what they think of you, and you have a chance that, you know, you have an arrested development. And I, for sure, from age 15 to 35, maybe 45, how did you handle that fame in college?
There was a joke that Sports Illustrated ran. What's the difference between God and Ryan Leaf? God doesn't think he's Ryan Leaf. And I thought it was hilarious.
I'd not heard it. And you can laugh at it now.
Yeah, I just thought I was better. I just thought I was a better person than you because I could play this silly game. That made me a better person, which is, and you're exactly right.
It's outrageous.
Yeah. It was arrested development. Probably like 13 years old when I figured out that I had this golden arm that could put me on a pedestal and I could get away with things that other people couldn't and the consequences weren't the same. And that's where my development stopped. And so my maturity level was like that of a 13-year-old. So when I went into the NFL and I was the second overall pick and I was given $31 million, that was like giving $31 million to a 13-year-old. That's how I would liken it to it. And it was, that's just a recipe for disaster, period. And that's exactly what ensued.
Yeah. Yeah. I get it, man. I do. When did you know you were ready for the draft?
You know, I started hearing, you know, scouts when they come talk about how it was between me and Peyton. And I was just like, how's that possible? I'm really?
Were you that taken aback by it?
I am walking around campus wearing a Danny Werfel jersey. You know, I'm about to be in the same sentence as him in terms of the Heisman Trophy, you know? So it was a whirlwind, man. And then once it became a realization like, oh, so this is real. I'm going to be the first or second pick in the NFL draft. Then I was like, okay, that's about right. That's how it's supposed to be, and I'm going to act accordingly. I could really see a shift after the Heisman Trophy to right before the Rose Bowl was played in like some interviews that I saw. I could see this behavior start to exhibit more. The asshole prick was starting to really come out publicly. When I go back and I look at these interviews and stuff like that, just flippant answers, kind of like a petulant child, and just like, you know, dismissive of everybody and everything. Like if I got a question from a reporter that seemed nonsensical in my mind, I'd just look at them like they were crazy. Like, what the fuck's wrong with you? Don't you know who I am? This is not worth my time. Go away. It's hard to say it, but it's so true that it just like, you cannot not say that that's the truth. And it doesn't cost me anything to be vulnerable and transparent about it now because it happened and everybody saw it, like, because it was public, you know?
I can only imagine. And look, I had depression and I'm sure mental illness growing up. I quit my high school team, you know, as the best player in the state, probably. You know, I was all over the map. I would get emotional.
I was dealing with undiagnosed mental health disorders that never knew about, you know?
Talk a minute about your desire to go to San Diego, all the hype that was going into the draft, your rookie season.
Well, I played on the West Coast in the Pac-10. I had family who lived in Encinitas, which was just a suburb of San Diego. And, you know, I was just like, who wouldn't want to live on the beach, in the sun, the babes, the money, and not in the middle of the Midwest in Indianapolis? I wasn't looking at the right things. I wasn't looking at that Marshall Faulk was in the backfield and Marvin Harrison was out on the perimeter. I wasn't looking at the right things. I just thought I was good enough. Flat out good enough that I was going to walk in there and do exactly what I did. But you don't understand, this is the 1% of the 1%.
Yeah.
It's just, it's a different animal. And unless you're willing to work at it from Sunday to Sunday, like every one of us has talent. Everybody who gets drafted and gets to that point has talent. Some of us a little bit more than the other, otherwise you wouldn't get drafted as high. But man, you don't put in the work from Sunday to Sunday, it ain't happening.
That it makes me think back, and the year that I left college and went to the NBA, I went early. Long story, we were going on probation, but I left early, and so I was the youngest player in the league my rookie year. And I just remember going, you know, probably went and visited 10 of the top teams that were going to be in the draft lottery, and I just remember feeling like a fraud, like I'm pretending to be a grown-up here. I would go in. I was wearing a suit that I'd just gotten. I remember being exhausted at the end of the day, you know, after going, having to sit with the owner and the GM and pretend to be a fucking adult. I felt like a 14-year-old. And I wonder if, you know, because I've seen some of your interviews around that time and you know, knowing what we know now, you know, it fills in some of the blanks. But I just wonder, you know, did you feel some of that going on?
Yeah, I was this adolescent with a egomaniac with a self-esteem problem is what it was. You know, I never felt...
Why the self-esteem problem, Ryan?
I'd just been shamed my whole life from so many people, starting with my mother to my whole state, to the media. So I just... You know, I didn't feel comfortable. I thought I was an overweight quarterback. I thought I was kind of like chubby and fat and not attractive. And so it was all a persona. It was not, never really me. There was only a few people that ever really truly got to know who Ryan was.
And did you know who you were?
No idea. You know, I was this football player. That's all I was worth. I felt like that was my worth and my identity was a football.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit TrinitySchool.org for more info now.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Class is in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
Player.
I get it, man. Do you ever think there was a chance you could have been successful in the NFL, you know, based on the person you were at the time and how the world had treated you at that point?
Maybe. You know, maybe if I get with the right franchise that just, like, accountability was at the forefront, like, hey, you are not going to play. I don't care how good you are. You're not going to play until you are accountable for your actions, and we're going to go figure this out. I really think there are some organizations that are like that, systemically, Pittsburgh Steelers for one of them. But I also think that, and you know, you've heard this plenty of times in recovery, like, no matter where you go, there you are.
Yeah.
You know, I was the problem. So it may have been, my character defects may have been hidden longer, let's say in Indianapolis, if I went number one. But don't forget, Peyton threw the most interceptions ever for a rookie. They only won three games. I won the same amount of games starting as Peyton did in my rookie year. Through less interceptions, not as many touchdowns, of course. I don't know how I could have dealt with the failure of being 3-13 or throwing that many interceptions, right? He learned how to deal with failure in a healthy way.
Hey, bro, he also had a dad that was the family business. And just
losing,
like my buddy,
and losing and failing,
but he played in the NFL and he went through all that stuff. And he is like Stephen and Seth Curry. They grew up around it and they know, you know, so you can't be hard on yourself about that. Do you remember a specific time or moment that the game started being less fun for you?
Well, I mean, I can give you the exact moment my career ended, and it was at Kansas City. We were 2-0. A rookie quarterback hadn't won his first two starts since 1983 in John Elway. And we walked into Kansas City in Arrowhead. And I was in the hospital all week with a staph infection. And my mom begged me not to play. And I thought the coolest thing, right? I'd come out of the hospital. I'd take my new team on the road at Kansas City against the likes of Derek Thomas and in that defense and James Hasty and Rich Gannon. And we beat the Chiefs on the road.
Yeah, be careful
great story.
What you wish for.
Yeah, I mean, I completed my first pass, played the worst game of my life. And it's not because I played poorly. You know, every rookie has a come-to-Jesus moment in the NFL. It's how I dealt with it. How I reacted to a reporter after the game, a cameraman, that then got carried over to the next day by one of the beat writers who wrote about it, and I confronted it in the locker room. And then there is the video when the internet had just started. It was like one of the first viral videos, I really think. You know, you got Jim Everett flying across the table at Jim Rome, and you got me yelling at this reporter like a petulant child being pulled away by Junior Seau into the shower to cool off. And then I don't remember a positive thing, and I would go on and play for four more years with different teams, but I don't remember another positive thing, and it's because of how I dealt with it. One moment ended it for me because of how I dealt with failure.
Have you ever talked to him, the reporter?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've made my amends to him. Jay Posner is his name.
Okay.
You know, just doing his job. I mean, he did kind of bait me a little bit. But again, you know, I was going to tell him, you know, how it was. I was going to intimidate.
So kind of big boyed him, got up over the top, which is what we assholes do.
F-ing don't talk to me, all right? Knock it off!
I appreciate your honesty, Ryan. Much the same. I was fortunate that, well, I didn't play football. I had never been able to make it with that sport, but I was fortunate to be traded and be able to handle my stuff enough emotionally where I had a second team you know, that I went to, because I was a kid, my first stop. And if I could have just played basketball and never had to talk to the media at all, oh, just sign me up. The problem is,
I figured it out, Rex.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jim Harbaugh was my backup quarterback year three. He taught me how to be a professional. I went on to Tampa Bay with Tony Dungy, Brad Johnson, and that team and that defense, and I learned how to be a professional and be a good teammate. Problem was, I'd wrecked my wrist that third year in San Diego falling on the baseball diamond, and so my talent wasn't as good, and my talent's what kept carrying me.
You could feel a difference throwing the ball.
Oh, yeah. It still pops out a joint. Yeah.
Okay. So on deep balls, touch balls, or just in general?
Anytime that I had to put any kind of velocity on it. It was called a scaphoid lunate disassociation. So essentially this ligament on the upper part of your wrist would dislocate. And my Tampa Bay teammates, Rondé Barber, told CBS a story about it back in the days, like we were playing in a preseason game and they look out at me and I throw this out route and in between plays, I'm running to the sideline, like pounding my hand and wrist against my thigh pad, trying to pop it back into play so I can play the next play, you know? And then that's where I kind of started, you know, being given a lot of painkillers to get through the week.
So I'm glad you brought that up. It was literally the next thing I was going to ask. When was the first time you received painkillers?
In college, you know, I've had 15 surgeries, orthopedic and others. So, you know, the first thing I had was a shoulder surgery in college, and they gave me these opiate painkillers afterwards. Mm-hmm. And it worked, right? They killed the pain. That's exactly what their name is. I mean, I liked it. And now I didn't abuse it or anything, but I knew it worked. And I was really, like, I didn't drink in high school. I didn't drink till my 18th birthday. I really didn't drink in college except binge drinking just to feel comfortable with people in moments. And never did drugs, you know, didn't smoke weed, nothing. I thought people that did all that stuff was morally corrupt. So it was just really evident or prevalent at the NFL level. You get on the plane after a game, they give you a couple pills and a couple cans of beer. And, you know, you take that edge off on the way home. You take pills till about Wednesday, and then you wean off them and get ready to play by Sunday. And that was just a ritual. Wasn't abusing them. Didn't realize that my brain wiring had, like, you know, really liked it, because competition was still the drug of choice, always has been. So when I walked away from the NFL on my final stop in Seattle, because I was unwilling to tell my head coach that I was incredibly depressed, I was tired, I was lazy, I felt lazy, I was sad all the time, I didn't know what was wrong, I just chose to quit. And so about 3 months after I quit, or retired, I told people, who retires at 27 years old, you know, I was in Vegas for a fight, because I still needed people to know that I was still a success. I had the money, the power, the prestige, you know. Prestige was a little tarnished, of course, with not being in the league anymore, but come on, second pick. Like, money was ultimately that was the end-all, be-all, so was at a fight, Tyson fight. They were announcing celebrities in the audience. The MC was. They announced Michael Jordan, Tiger Woods, Charles Barkley, Dr. Dre. You know, the audience cheered and clapped. And the MC there at the MGM Grand announced my name. And, like, the whole auditorium just booed and hissed. And it's not like that hadn't happened before, right? I mean, you play football, you're on the opposing team's field, but you're wearing armor. You got a helmet on it. My addict brain heard, not only are you a terrible football player, but you are a awful human being. That's what I heard. And so, sure enough, that night, we were going to go to parties where there were Super Bowl champs and Hall of Famers, and why I always felt judged and less than and like I didn't belong. An acquaintance of mine offered me some Vicodin, and I mixed them with the alcohol I was drinking. This would be the first time that I abused it. And I didn't feel any of that. I didn't feel that judgment. I didn't feel that fear. I didn't feel that less than. I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel better. But it turns out I was just searching for that feeling of not feeling any of the feelings that I had been feeling for so long. I just wanted to numb out. And that night changed. Like, that would be the next 8 years of my life chasing that initial high from that night of not feeling it.
So you can pinpoint it. You feel like that's the first time you thought, you couldn't have thought right away, I have a problem.
No. I didn't think I had a problem for a long time. I thought I was doing the wrong thing the right way. Probably years. 3 years, probably.
Yeah. Okay. So you were just self-medicating, right?
Yeah. I wasn't seeing a therapist. I was self-medicating, right. I was going to doctors, you know, telling them I was in pain, which
doctor shopping.
I was.
Yeah.
Which I was. Yeah. I was in some sort of physical pain, but mostly I was in emotional pain.
It's pretty amazing, especially back during that time. I'm familiar with it. It's pretty amazing. And again, this goes to ego and addiction and everything. Amazing the amount of doctors you can just cold call, drop your name, and we'll give you the medicine, right?
Yeah, you come in with x-rays and show you got beat up for a living, and then you manipulate the situation the best you can, and they got kids, and you're like, yeah, I'll sign a bunch of autographs for your kids,
right.
No problem.
Of course.
You're going to give me a script for 90 with 5 refills?
Refills.
Okay, great.
Please.
Yeah. No.
More refills, please.
In Montana, Leaf was accused of burglary and drug activity. In a plea deal, he pled guilty to the charges and agreed to enter a drug treatment program.
Movie star or sports star, the rules are the same for everybody. He's had enough chances, and I hope the judge will send him to prison.
James Farron says he's working to put the former NFL quarterback and WT quarterback's coach behind bars for the charges he pled guilty to in Randall County.
When you get arrested the first time, Ryan, you're taking pills from college kids to feed your addiction. You know, you're working there. They're not, you know, I don't even think they were paying you at the time. You were just kind of doing it to get back into the game. And it seemed like, for all intents and purposes, you were kind of thriving there. What was happening in your life, though, at that point?
I was an incredible mess. Just hadn't, you know, coached these kids up, and they were just excelling, leading the nation in passing, and we were winning. And
are you partying at night and stuff?
No, I don't party, right? I don't waste my high on anybody else. It's mine and mine alone, right? So I want to be alone. I don't want anybody else to see. I want to treasure it. It's like a relationship. Like, I would say no to dates with beautiful women because I had a night set with my pills. I wanted that all to myself, and I didn't want anybody to know I was doing it. You know, that's the bigger thing, right? And so I just self-medicated and just kept doing it until I couldn't do it anymore. And then I had to take advantage of these kids, you know, who looked up to me and respected me. I was this pro football player, and they're playing for a Division II football team, and they just got hurt. And now here's Coach Leaf at my door going, hey, can I have some of those pills? My wrist is really hurting. What do they do? You know, they give you some, and then they do the only thing they can do is they call their parents. They're 18 and 19 years old. And they go, Mom and Dad, I don't know what to do. And Mom and Dad do the right thing. You know, they contact my employer. Now, they also send an anonymous email to ESPN too, but there's consequences to your actions, and mine are public consequences. And it probably is the biggest reason why I'm here in front of you. It's probably saved my life, because there are a lot of us out there that are going through the same things you and I went through, but weren't held accountable, and they just disappear in the shadows and they're gone. And so a lot of people, you know, compliment me about how I did it in the public eye. And I'm like, that saved my life, you know? If it was isolating all by myself, I would have just died somewhere and no one would have known.
My friends often say the same. They say, you know, something had to happen. You were going to die. And, you know, thank goodness something happened. So the second time you get arrested, though, 7-year sentence, 2 years in jail.
32 months, actually 3 years.
Almost 3 years in jail. What was it like in prison? How'd you survive it?
Adult daycare. Not a deterrent. A relief. Didn't go outside.
A relief. Please continue.
Well, I was just, every day I'd wake up and, do I have pills? And if I didn't, how can I get them? You know? And if I can't be high, I want to be dead. That's where I was. It's so crazy to think that's where I was. And I got to remember it. I have to remember it. Otherwise, it's just shockingly, because I wake up every morning now and I'm just like, I choose to be happy. You know, I can choose that. Even if it's a bad day and bad shit happens and life isn't fair and we're going through COVID and I lose my job and all this stuff. Like, I can get up, meditate and pray, go for a little hike, feel therapeutic in nature, find my higher power, and choose to be happy. And I couldn't do it. I couldn't go a day without numbing myself out and altering my mood. And I clamored every night in the mirror for somebody to help me. And finally, my higher power just said, you don't get it, dude. So I'm going to send the sheriff's department to help you save your life. And that's what happened.
So go through a little bit of, you know, what was going on in your mind. You had gone to some open houses. You had broken into a couple places. And this is in your hometown, right?
Yeah, people don't lock their doors. So you just go up and knock on the outskirts of farmhouses. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, there'll be some pills in the medicine cabinet or in the cabinet in the kitchen. And I didn't go around and collect. As soon as I got them in my hand, like the psychological effect. Yeah, I went home. You know, I was done. Okay, my day's over. Now I don't have to feel anything for the rest of the day. I'll sleep and I'll go back at it again tomorrow. In the state of Montana, how I didn't get shot in somebody's house, you know. I remember walking into a house one time and going into a bedroom, and there was this man asleep on his bed. And I was just like so taken aback because I had like screamed when I walked in the house, like, anybody here? Anybody here? You know, and then there was a ton of pills in there. So now I know he was probably an opiate addict and was probably just passed out, you know. So It's crazy.
Yeah. So until you were sentenced, you were still using the pills. And so when you went in, you were
I never bonded out. I got arrested and I never got out. So
okay. So you had to have, you know, you're going through this withdrawal.
I bonded out the first time and got rearrested like 48 hours later. And this time they pulled my bond. Texas revoked my probation from being arrested down there. And I was stuck there. My parents wouldn't bail me out, which was incredibly hard on their part. I can only imagine. My mom wanted to take care of her son, but she was so fearful.
And at this point, financially struggling?
Yeah, I was broke.
Okay.
I was broke, yeah. I had lost every single dollar. My credit score was like 500. I was, yeah.
I've been there, man. I've been there. So you're going in and you go straight in. And so now you're having to withdraw by yourself. This is not a place they're going to.
But I was taking it one time a day at like dinner time, like, you know, 100 milligrams, enough to get 100 milligrams. I mean, whether that, if they were 10s or 5s, they either had to take 20 or 10, right? And the doctor in prison just said the withdrawal wasn't as bad because it was like, it wasn't like all day long, just taking pills all day long to maintain. It was like this one thing. So, you know, I overdosed the night I went in. They didn't know, but I was just a mess. And I don't remember anything for about 2 days. I had gone to court. My mugshot, of course, looks like, you know, Tiger Woods's. And I just like knew immediately. I was like, dude, I know what that dude's on. Exactly what I was on. And then like 3 days later, I was just like, I was so fearful. The psychology of the withdrawal, you know, was so fearful about. Of course, there was some sweating at night a couple times, but I mean, it wasn't incredibly bad. Like I've seen it and I've heard it to be, but my mind was still running like a rabbit or a rat in a maze. You know, I was like, I need to get out of here. I need to figure out a way to get out of here, get as many pills as I can, ride until the wheels fall off. That's all. There's nothing else out there. You know, I just still wanted to die or be high, and I couldn't do it in there in solitary confinement. And then I went through the sentencing process. I pled guilty. You know, I just was a ton of accountability in my message to the judge. I don't know where the hell that came from. And I was just like, warehouse me. And that's what he did. And he said it. I'm going to warehouse you. I'm going to give you a number. And it was the first time I ever felt marginalized in my life.
I'm both humiliated and embarrassed for the situation, not only for myself, especially for my family, and it seems to this community. I found that 8 days in jail has been somewhat of a sanctuary. I've discussed, you know, with my family, and they believe I've held them for ransom for 36 years. And I don't understand why I should have to do that anymore. I do believe that these 15 months will be productive for me. I don't believe that 9 months of it from now is going to be any different than right now. 5 or 10 years of Ryan pre-drum to my family, this community, particularly this nation, maybe pure bliss for people. I'm lazy, I'm dishonest, I'm selfish. These things are behaviors before my addiction kicked in. I hate that excuses like professional football or brain tumor or those letters that I finally got to read about 5 days ago. They had a totally different, had totally different reactions than most people probably would have. I felt that they were all excuses.
Well, along those lines, based on your experience, you know, what are your feelings on the way we handle addiction in this country, the way we criminalize it, the way we send people to prison and not to treatment, you know, the ease with which somebody can get addicted and the lack of help there is for them? What are your thoughts?
Well, the stigma is what did it in the early 80s with the, you know, war on drugs with Nancy and Ronald Reagan. You know, that just... You know, that was the drug war. That just made it, ramped it up to a place where they built all these government agencies to control and task force and everything like that. And then they built these for-profit prisons, which I was in, and they incentivized judges and DAs to get prison time because they have contracts with the states that they needed to be 80% or 85% full. And if they're not, they're still going to pay the rate of it being that full. So it incentivizes them to send nonviolent drug offenders to prison because... You know, they need them full. They need the beds occupied. So there's a reason why we're the largest populated prison system in the world and are, like, in comparison, one of the less populated. You know, there's a lot of things that are changing. I've studied it a ton. I've tried to do some lobbying and get some bills passed and watch what Portugal has done, seen what Colorado has done around marijuana, and now what the state of Oregon has done around decriminalization of pretty much everything. And I think that's the answer. I really do. And, you know, I'll argue up and down with people about, you know, well, people will just be lined up around Walgreens to get Vicodin. And I'm like, not everybody's like me. You know, not everybody's like me.
Right.
You know, I would do that because I'm a drug addict. You know, you can educate, you can tax, you can set up recovery and things like that. And you could end governmental oversight, the DEA and things like that wouldn't have to exist. Drug cartels would be limited. You know, like, there's just a lot that could happen in a positive way. I really do believe that. The substance being out of my brain in prison has allowed me to articulate. I think the brain tumor that I had cut out of my brain that was on my brain stem.
I was going to ask you about that. In 2011, you had a tumor cut out. How'd that change your life?
Well, I mean, as an athlete, you know, I get hurt, I find a doctor, he fixes it, I move forward. That's exactly the way I looked at it. But going through the radiation and, like, the chemo side of things, because they couldn't remove it all because it was intertwined in my brainstem, and me losing my hair and feeling fatigued and achy and sick, and the doctor asking if he could prescribe me some painkillers and me not telling him anything, it resulted in my relapse. I was 18 months sober. He gave them to me December 1st, 2011. By March 30th, 2012, I was in prison. Because I'm a drug addict, and I just felt I deserved it. So I didn't tell the doctor I had a problem before. And so I just can't have them. I just can't have them. That's the difference. I'm allergic.
Twins, same. I love them. And the second I took the first, I took OxyContin to begin with. And the second I took it, I felt smarter, funnier, better, nicer, all of it. So I understand what that yearn is. I get it.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Finding the right news podcast can feel like dating. It seems promising until you start listening.
When you hit play on Post Reports, you'll get fascinating conversations and sometimes a little fun, too. I'm Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Azadi. Martine and I are the hosts of Post Reports. The show comes out every weekday from The Washington Post.
You can follow and listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. It'll be a match, I promise.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.
You know, I've said before, and I'll say again, you're an inspiration, man. You had an incredible physical talent and ability to play a game. It made you famous and rich and all that, but you've constantly been dealt blows your whole life and career, some of it from yourself, some from society and the world around you, I know. But here's what's inspiring. You don't quit. You keep bouncing back, finding new things to try. Try to continue to be a better person. That's really admirable, Ryan. Really admirable.
Well, what are you supposed to do? You know, like, I've come to this realization, like, what am I supposed to do? I'm going to get up, and I think there's a radical acceptance around being a flawed human being, like everybody else, trying to be better. So the only thing I can do is to get up and do the next right thing. Because yesterday is something I can't control anymore. Take accountability for what I've done and just try to be part of the solution. And that's been the being of service, Rex, and you know this better than anybody. Being of service is you remove yourself from the equation completely and you make it about somebody else and your life changes. It does. And that's the foundation of who I am and what I do now. It's cannot be about me ever again.
What keeps you going? Is it that?
I don't know what keeps me going, to be honest with you. You know, this past year, it's been difficult. There's been another arrest for something that is a problem in this country with dealing with police. You know, when you're having a mental health incident, my Anna and I are trying to put a bill in place that when you call the police and there's a mental health incident happening, they don't send 9 police officers who exacerbate the problem. They send a caseworker or somebody who can help. Because all it did is make it worse. You know, I remember them pulling me into the police car and Anna like racing and following the car to the police station, trying to get them to stop. And them just like, we don't care what you want, ma'am. The state of California wants to prosecute. And then you lose everything. And you find out who your friends are, really. And I think it, I don't know if I thought I'd be grateful, you know, just about a year ago. But I tell you what, man, I'm incredibly grateful. I found out who my friends are, who know my values, know my character.
Well, that's good. You know, I don't even, you know, this is the first time we've actually ever met. People might not know that, but I know when that happened, I just reached out
and DM'd you.
Like, hey, you know, hang in there. I don't know what's going on, but you know, you're never as bad as your worst moment, Ryan, if you learn from it, right?
Well, that's the perfect example of, like, you know, in our culture, cancel culture, and then me looking at it going, what was that? I'm the same guy as I was on May 21st as I am on May 22nd. I'm the exact same person. A flawed human being trying to be better every single day. Nothing's changed. Still wanting to help people. Still want to go forward. So what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to just pack it in? Say, fuck it. I'm done. You know, I tried. You know, I tried to get back out there and be of service and be a better human being. You do it. There's no alternative. You do it.
Yeah, you do it. Some people don't do it, though, Ryan. And that's the thing. And so don't, I'm just suggesting, don't just shrug that off, because I do remember sitting in at the worst moment of my life a couple times, sitting there and just being so disappointed in myself.
Well, I tell you what, I think a lot of people thought I relapsed, is what I think a lot of people thought.
Oh, this most recent time you're talking.
Yeah, and if I hadn't have been sober, I don't think I would have had the mindset to deal with something in a healthy, positive way, right? And then to then go through the rest of the year, which was probably one of the hardest years to stay sober, and get my 9-year chip.
Absolutely.
On April 1st.
Congratulations. I mean,
thank you. That made it every bit more worthwhile. And I just decided in 2021 to take some more control back, you know, start my own show. If no one else was going to let me do it.
That's what I was going to say. What made you want to do that?
Well, you know, Rich Eisen's been an unbelievable support of mine. Every time he is gone, he asked me to guest host, and I just love doing
awesome.
It.
Awesome. Rich is great.
I love doing it. I mean, you got to love the man who just, you know, who knows your values, knows who you are, gives you an unbelievable opportunity when I think probably other people wouldn't. And so I wanted to start my own show. I didn't know how to do it. I got a group of guys, three guys, who are freshly out of college, who know software and technology, because I don't.
Yeah, same.
You know, I put the studio together here. You know, they put a logo. I did the show right before I came on with you today. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 12:30 Pacific to 1:30 Pacific. You know, it's grassroots. We've got four sponsors right now, just trying to move forward. And then I also, you know, a buddy of mine, Kevin Connolly, who owns a company called APM. It's a podcasting network, essentially. We're going to start. I essentially just sold one. My life story. It's we're calling it Bust, and it's my testimonial. That's it. It's just 13 episodes of my story. No holds barred, unvarnished. We think we really can help a lot of people with it. And then when we go into season two and season three, you know, I'm going to reach out to people who maybe have been in similar situations that I have in all genres of sports. And some of them have gotten through it and can be success stories, and some of them are still fighting it. And we want to be able to be there to be helpful in a way. And we're going to transition into it and call it the Lighthouse Podcast, because that's, as
fantastic.
You know, that's what we become. Yep.
Nice, buddy. That's so great. What does football mean to you now?
I think it's just one of the greatest things that's ever been made. Gave me everything. Unfortunately, it's caused a lot of people a lot of pain. But I also don't think those that have gone through these struggles would have given it up for anything. You know, I think a lot of times we just want to be informed. Like, if the NFL knew about what this does to our brains, I believe I'm living with CTE, like a lot of my brothers are. And there are a lot of brothers out there that are dying. Vincent Jackson just recently, and after the Super Bowl. And I don't know why that one hit me so hard, but, you know, the NFL's not going to do anything, and neither is our union. So it's going to have to be us.
Will you let your kids play?
No. No, my son's not going to play football. He's going to be 6'9", so I'm going to give him the rock. I'm going to give him the rock, either to throw it on a mound or to put it in the hoop. All right?
There
That's what
go.
I'm going to do.
Nice.
But whatever he wants to do, if he wants to be a dancer or be a construction worker or a fireman, which is what he wants to be right now, is a fireman and a construction worker. So, you know, by all means.
You know, when you watch the game today, you see these young quarterbacks out there who are kind of almost carbon copies of the quarterback. You are fast, athletic, but can throw the ball downfield. Do you ever see yourself out there now, you know, playing in this era where it's very much different? Protect the quarterback.
I forgot. Just, I've been told for how bad I was that I haven't looked. In this past couple years, I've looked at old film and highlights and stuff. The game against Indianapolis, my fifth game of the year against Peyton, dude, I out-dueled him like crazy. I threw this one from like rolling out to my left, Patrick Mahomes style, like flipped it up to, I mean, I was astonished when I watched it play. And I'm like, holy shit. You know, why have you believed everybody who has no merit in all this for so long? So I love football. I talk about it all the time. I wouldn't be able to do the job I do now working with SiriusXM and ESPN and hosting Rich's show if I didn't love football, and I love talking about it. But I'm also not, you know, I don't wear blinders either. Like, I'm honest about my assessment with how the NFL handles stuff and the NFLPA, and I'm not, you know, the propaganda machine doesn't affect me anymore. So that's not lost on me, but I love what the game does for people. It brings leadership out. It allows us to have real, honest conversations. We've watched the political landscape over the last 2 years, 3 years with Colin Kaepernick and everything just, I mean, you and I have a really unique experience being arrested as criminals, like real criminals.
Real criminals.
I didn't feel for once a fear for my life, ever. But any man, woman of color who gets pulled over or engaged with the police, there's an honest to God fear that they could die that night. And that's the white privilege that we talk about.
Yeah, I get it. Very well put, Ryan. You know, if you could do this all over again, if you could go back and talk to 21-year-old Ryan Leaf, what would you tell him?
It's going to hurt like hell, man, but you're going to be okay, and you're going to be a better man for it. That's exactly what I
would say. What would you do differently?
The only thing differently is I would treat people better. That's the only thing I think I could, you know, I could have still been the asshole and been unsuccessful and mishandled things, but, you know, I just treated people so poorly, I think is the bottom line in all this.
Are you better with that today?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, the moment I walk into a room now and when I walk up to somebody, I ask them their name. Everybody always wants to talk to me, like, Ryan, so great to meet you. And I just immediately stop. I'm like, well, what's your name? because they don't hear that from athletes and stuff like that, because we're all such narcissists, right? So that's like, I've practiced that. Like when I walk into a room, I make it about the other person and I ask them how they're doing or what's going on in their life. And, you know, I don't need to fill you in with my life. You know, I love my life, but you're usually there to listen to me speak or something. And so I want to hear what's going on with you. And I want to know your name. That's changed. I could care less back in the day, you know, who you were or what you were. And if you were a pretty girl, the only thing I cared about it was whether or not I could take you home. You know, that was it.
What's next for you, Ryan?
Be the best dad I can be. That's first and foremost. It's the best thing I've ever done. Love him so much. And then I just want to continue to help people. I found that in the pandemic, not being able to travel around the country and speak because of COVID. It's finally opening up. I got my vaccine finalized yesterday. I'm traveling to Nashville at the end of May and then to West Virginia, two of the, you know, Tennessee and West Virginia, along with Kentucky, three of the largest states have been hit so ravagedly with opiates. I'm going to go speak in those two venues back in public, which is huge for me. Just, I didn't realize how much a difference that made in my mental health, giving back like that.
It makes a difference.
Yep.
I can tell you from personal experience, speaking about opioids, it keeps you honest. It's therapeutic, at least for me. It's therapeutic. And bro, you've got an amazing story to tell. And hearing it come from you, it will resonate with people. You know, thanks for joining today, Ryan. It's been a pleasure, privilege speaking with you.
I love what you're doing, man. You spread remind me a lot of Ellen DeGeneres in that when I was in prison, just like spreading like positivity out there, least to the masses. And so,
hey, I'm faking it just like everybody else. Thank you, man. Hey, everyone out there, I need you to be sure and subscribe to Ryan's podcast, The Ryan D. Leaf Show, on the Believe Podcast Network. That's BLEAV.
As well as YouTube.
As well as YouTube.
I believe you can get the audio version, but on YouTube, you actually get the video version too. So it's fun. It's a good group of guys.
Fantastic. Ryan, I can't thank you enough, buddy. Come back sometime.
Hey, thank you. Anything you ever need, you just holler. All right.
Best of luck to you, bud.
Charges. Sharing our run-ins with the law. Charges. Athletes, entertainers, and ballers. Charges. Every celebrity ain't flawless. Charges. We came a long way from living lawless. Charges. Sharing our run-ins with the law. Charges. Athletes, entertainers, and ballers. Charges. Every celebrity ain't flawless. Charges. We came a long way from living lawless. Charges.
Charges is created by Portal A and Control Media. It's produced by DB Podcasts in association with iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.